What's up, folks? Welcome back into Sports Talk, our special weekend kickoff edition at the Treasure Chest Casino. We're here every Thursday getting ready for that NFL season and happy to welcome in Jen Hale, NFL on Fox reporter. Jen, thanks so much for the time. Who knew it was going to be such a crazy day?
Yeah, Jen.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Jen. Give us your first thoughts. The Packers, the youngest team in the NFL. Now they add another star player to the lineup in 26-year-old Micah Parsons.
The Packers just upped their franchise value for another 10 years. They received a major cornerstone piece on defense. That is going to pay huge dividends down the line. And it made me stop and think, boy, this is the player empowerment era truly coming full circle in the NFL. I think Jerry Jones thought he could control this situation, thought that it was 5-10 years ago when he could bully a player into a franchise tag. That's the way it was then. This is a sign of the times. Everything you're seeing in the NBA, the portal, how it's changing college, player choice, player empowerment is alive and well, especially in the NFL, which was probably the last bastion of it. And not only did Micah Parsons get the trade he wanted, but guys, he got paid, the highest non-paid quarterback in the league, $188 million over 4 years. This is a trade. This is a move that's going to change the landscape, not just the Packers, but the NFL landscape, I think, for years to come.
And you didn't go to a lousy team. Jen, you're going to a team that could legitimately play on Super Bowl Sunday.
100%.
I really think the Packers are that good.
I think they could be. I want to see them in regular season. I want to see them not in pajama football. But I love what Jordan Love's doing. I love that coaching staff. It's an innovative offense. And adding Micah Parsons to defense, you know, he's a fifth-year guy. So he's still young in his career, but he's old enough. He's going to set the tone. He's going to establish the standard. He's going to be the locker room guide, certainly for the defense, if not for the entire squad. It is a huge move for the Packers. And like I said, I think you're going to see the ripple effects on this team, but also on the NFL, with him being able to dictate where he wanted to go and getting paid for it. That's just tremendous.
Jen, the news came out this week. The Saints are going to start Spencer Rattler at quarterback. Talked about this before, that I sort of see this scenario similar to what happened in New England last year when they went with Jacoby Brissett early. And I think it was either the fifth or sixth game. Then they turned around and gave the baton to Drake May. He struggled early on, but he looked like a totally different guy at the end of the year throwing the football. And I sort of think the same situation will happen here. But Spencer gets the early nod. Your thoughts on Rattler and how that will play out for the Saints in an offense that, you know, nobody shows you a lot in preseason. But, man, I can't tell you how this offense is going to look for the Saints in 2025.
I can, Mike. It's going to be a rebuilding year.
I can figure that one. Come on.
You're not going to be lighting up scoreboards, but that's okay. It is what it is. The Saints have kicked the can down the road for so long. You got to go through this. Every team goes through this at some point, and now it's the Saints' turn. I love the decision to start Rattler. He is the more prepared quarterback. He's the more seasoned signal caller, even though that seasoning isn't a great deal of seasoning. It's more than Shook has. He knows what live NFL bullets look like. Let Shook cook. Let Shook develop. And, yeah, I do think we're going to see Shook later in the season. Number one, I think he could end up being the better quarterback with a little time and a little experience under his belt. Number two, you've got a tremendous quarterback draft class coming up in the upcoming year. So what the Saints need to decide is, do we have our guy for the future, or is this a Band-Aid to get us through until we use another top pick on another quarterback? And that's going to be, to me, the biggest decision of Kellen Moore's young career, absent of some sort of crazy franchise injury.
Jen, in Atlanta, and you did the preseason games for the Falcons. Michael Penix did not take one snap. Then McGarry goes down with a big injury for them because, you know, he had been a staple along that offensive line. Their defense, I mean, they got some new pieces there. We'll see how all that comes together. But, you know, and I know they have a little bit more certainty than the Saints, but there's a lot of question marks about the Falcons, too.
You know, I feel like for 3 years we've been saying, wow, they're the sleeper team, certainly in the NFC South. They've got this great piece. They've got that great piece. They've got Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson. They do. They have some fantastic pieces. And the theory going into this season is, look, you needed a quarterback to pull it all together, and you needed at least a better defense, somebody that didn't let the other offense just run away with things. Their defense has a ton of depth, so much depth. Mike, tell me how you would have liked this when you played. Their defensive line coach, Nate Ali, he is committing to rotating his defensive linemen every four snaps, you know, as long as the hurry up allows. They have so much depth there. He wants to keep them fresh. It's a defense that's going to give up points, but it's going to get takeaways in theory and put the ball back in the hands of its offense. The one place you brought up, Caleb McGarry, the one place to me they could not afford an injury was on that O-line. That was their thinnest position. So many new faces already on that squad, on that line. Players changing positions. Caleb McGarry is going to be incredibly hard to replace. They already had a new starting center, Ryan Neuzel, which, you know, a competent, cool, calm, seasoned starting center is so huge for a younger, newer quarterback. So this is going to be a tough test for Michael Penix. And I think if opposing defensive lines can get to him and put pressure on him, which it sounds like with this O-line is going to be the case, I think it could be a long breaking in period for him.
Jen, we've heard a lot about Kyle Pitts this offseason. I feel like that happens almost every other year as well. Should we expect a breakout year, I guess, from him to finally live up to his draft status?
Steve, it's a great question, and I would say this year more so than other years because it's a contract year. And don't we always see players find another level when their paycheck is on the line? So Kyle Pitts knows he's underachieved. He was very involved in camps and OTAs, putting in extra work. From that perspective, I liked what I saw from him. Can he get on the field and prove it when the whistle blows? That's the big question. He really loves working with Michael Penix. He seems to have a great connection with him. They've put in a lot of time in the offseason. To me, the offensive line and Kyle Pitts are what that season hinges on, assuming Michael Penix is what people think he was from the three games he started last season.
Jen, kind of got sidetracked early with this because of the Parsons deal, but want to bring back, I know New Orleans is your home. You've always loved the city, even though, you know, you live somewhere else, grew up, you know, out in Alabama. But your thoughts on Katrina, because you were at that time, we didn't know one another, but you were working for MSNBC. So you had to give me back the information. I thought you were somewhere else, but you were working for MSNBC. You were sent to the Mississippi Gulf Coast because it was coming in there, and that's exactly where it came in. And then you were sent to the city just to see that the first time is, even for people that lived here, it was shocking. But you covered it from as Katrina is fixing to roll into Mississippi, and then it rolled into what happened when the levees broke in New Orleans.
One of the defining moments of my adult life, sure. I think so many people feel that way. I've just always been in my blood, as my mother says. It's always been home for me. I was working for MSNBC, and they sent me down to where the eye was supposed to make landfall, and indeed, in Biloxi. So we got there, you know, in the beginning, Katrina, another hurricane in theory, right? Before the worldwide media was when the levees broke. So we got some of the very last shots of that Mississippi Gulf coastline before it was annihilated and wiped out. And I will never forget, after everybody had boarded up and evacuated, it was me and a videographer who's still a dear friend, walking the beach, taking video of all those old homes, old structures, never imagining in 10 hours it would all be gone. I'd never experienced or seen anything like it, certainly not in person, which always hit so much harder. We were there for 2 or 3 days. I can remember NBC sending supplies into us by boat because the interstate was all torn up. You couldn't drive supplies in yet. And then, of course, the levees failed in New Orleans and all hell broke loose. The man-made disaster that threatened threatened to wipe out the city. You know, I think everyone remembers there were lawmakers nationally who didn't want to rebuild, who wanted to surrender the city. And that's what galvanized so many of us to fight for what we loved. So although it was a tremendously difficult assignment, literally you're watching coffins wash up, you're seeing the animals trapped on roofs that you can't help. By the time I got here to New Orleans from Mississippi, most people had been removed from the roofs, but the animals were still there. Seeing what was happening inside the convention center and the Superdome, I won't even say it was a third world country. It was a horror movie. Very difficult and very proud of this city and this population for overcoming it and putting their foot down and saying, not only are we going to come back, but we're going to come back better and stronger. We're going to use this opportunity to revamp our education system. We're going to use this to set a new business standard. And of course, we still have a long ways to go. We are certainly not there yet, but I think that was the beginning of some important changes that hopefully will continue to make New Orleans an even more amazing place to live.
Jen, so you came to do television in New Orleans. 2009, is my memory right on that? Or 8?
Would have been 2008. So when MSNBC moved me after Katrina, I didn't want to leave. And I started looking for opportunities to come back to New Orleans full time. And then that eventually led to the morning anchor spot at Fox 8.
So to see what you saw initially and then coming back, and I know you had visited a few times in between that, you could see that the city had started to make that move to come back. And I think that was a big part. I know you love the city, but just to see what the Saints meant to this region in 2009 to go on that run, win you a Super Bowl title. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, Steve and I hear it quite a bit about, oh, y'all talk too much about sports. Well, sports was a big part of the healing at that particular time. And I think it did bring everybody sort of together that you could pull for one thing, and it really did come together.
I don't think you can overstate it enough, Mike, because, again, I'll go back to, and maybe because I was covering it from a different perspective, the MSNBC perspective, there were so many national lawmakers talking about, we don't need to rebuild New Orleans. This is going to happen again. Just let it go. And of course, we know that people here were coming back into town, living in trailers, living in under FEMA tarps to start cleaning their property and getting things back together. But from a national debate perspective back then, there was a question mark about whether federal funds should be used to rebuild the city. And so the Saints, that game in the Dome where Steve Gleason blocked the punt, the famous play, that it was so much bigger and more than sports, because that sent a message beyond Louisiana, beyond the Gulf South, that we're not going anywhere. You can get on board or you can stay over there, but we're coming back whether you help or not. So it was tremendous. And then the Super Bowl, I think, just continued that. And what the Super Bowl did for the city was show how much it had recovered, because we know the locals here. We know what the national image is. It's Bourbon Street. It's drinking. It's partying. So many people don't realize New Orleans is so much more than that. I mean, I'm on the road so much, and I always get questions of, well, where would you actually live in New Orleans? Where would you send your kid to school? People just think all of New Orleans is Bourbon Street. And having that Super Bowl spotlight, all that programming, it was able to show the world how much New Orleans had come back, how special it was, how much people fought for it. And you know, no shade to Bourbon Street. I love the French Quarter. But how much more the city is than just that. So sports were huge in delivering the message worldwide.
And where I live at, people are like, you're just an hour away from New Orleans? It's like you live like three states down. I was like, no, I really don't. But it goes to show the different regions, and everybody's got a little bit different look to it. So my final question to you, come on, you got to use some of your luck now. You got to pull LSU out of victory in game one against Clemson. Come on. You got to push the chips in the middle of the table now eventually and win the opener. Jen, here's the crazy thing. You have not won an opener since Joe Burrow was quarterback in
exactly.
LSU in 2019.
Overdue.
Oh, my
overdue.
God.
Overdue. And this is the year it happens. $18 million on this class. on this team. You know, the challenge is going to be having all that talent, all that new talent, great talent, but new talent, come together and gel and work as a unit. But I think they're going to do it. They got to run the ball. They've got to run the ball. If that Clemson defensive front defense has one weakness, they do not defend the run well. They do everything else well. Also want to see Garrett Nussmeier. You know, Brian Kelly's, as coaches go, pretty forthcoming about injuries. He keeps saying Nussmeier's fine. I sure as heck hope so. But, you know, if your quarterback's not 100%, what do? You run the ball. You run the ball, you run the ball, you run the ball. And that has been, ironically, an Achilles heel for LSU as of late, despite, what, two decades of that being LSU's hallmark. Lately, it hasn't been. They've got to get back to that, and they've got to work as a team, that offensive line. When Nussmeier's throwing, they've got to step up. Those are your three keys.
Here's my deal. When you get four offensive linemen drafted for the first time in one draft class since 1943, you should have been able to run the football last year, and you couldn't when you needed to and had to. That's crazy. That's really a crazy deal for LSU. They were not a real physical team running the football last year at all.
No, no. And like I said, that's been the hallmark for so long, DBs and RBs. Got to get back to that to some extent. It's been a major point of emphasis for Brian Kelly. You've got to have somewhat of a balanced attack. And like I said, if you're going to beat Clemson, you're going to have to do it. And I think the Tigers need a strong start, Mike, Steve, because you know what? The schedule doesn't get any easier.
Jen, always appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Do you know your week one assignment? Are you going to be doing Bucks versus Falcons?
I will not.
Not.
I will be south, though. It'll be a draft day showdown. I've got Panthers and Jaguars.
All right, great. Thanks for joining us again. Appreciate the time. And
thank
always,
you, Jen.
Appreciate hearing from you.
Bye.
That is NFL on Fox reporter Jen Hale joining us right there. We're going to take a break. Be back with more sports talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Stay tuned right after this on WWL. Getting ready for LSU kicking off the season against Clemson. That's Saturday in South Carolina. You can start your game day 2 o'clock. Mike Dottiglia and Herb Tyler at the Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. They're going to be at the Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge. Come out and count down to the big game at Acme. 16 surround sound TVs, best drink specials. Great place to hang out for LSU and college football. All thanks to the good folks at Map Construction. Then at 4:30. LSU's official pregame show and kickoff at 6:30 with the voice of the Tigers, Chris Blair, and color analyst Jacob Hester. Tiger versus Tiger, Saturday on WWL and streaming live on the free Odyssey app. Had a lot going on, Mike. Didn't even get into some of the LSU news today.
Yeah, and Tristan Keys, no shock to me, the wide receiver from Mississippi, either ranked either one or two on everybody's list for top prep receivers. Decommitted from LSU, has committed to Tennessee. If I'm Tennessee, I ain't holding my breath on that too till he signs something. But you could see Keys was looking around almost within a week after he commits. Why commit then? You know what? Why are you committing?
It's the game everyone plays now.
Man, I don't like that part. I'll be honest with you. If you're not sure, then don't commit to a school. That's the way I look at it.
Looking for the bigger payout.
Listen, I get that. And listen, I'm all for guys getting paid. But, man, the thing about you making a commitment, and then within the week, you traveling to Ole Miss and Tennessee. And
you always say it until there's, you know, pen to paper.
Sign it.
Right.
Keys has committed to Tennessee, but, you know, I tell my Tennessee fans, hey, he committed to LSU too. Well,
buyer beware.
Yeah, just be careful. Now he's a hell of a player now. He got big time skill set as a player, and he can really stretch the field. He's a big receiver, very talented young man. You could see why he was ranked where he was as far as high school prep talent's concerned as a receiver. But that's the only thing I don't like, Steve, is the commitment stuff. And then within 48 hours, you're going somewhere else. You can take the visits. I understand that, but
yeah,
man, that part about it, you get as much money as you can. I understand that part. Me and Abear is good with that.
There's a little bit of honor behind it, though. You feel like when you're making a commitment to someone.
My thing is, if you're not real sure, then don't commit.
Yeah.
You know, it's that simple. You don't have to verbally commit. Also, too, on the Bayou, and one of Charlie and I's top guests, and man, we love to have him on, Tavon Sadler of Boog. He got a contract extension today from Nicholls State. He's the men's basketball coach there. First coach ever at Nicholls State, back-to-back 20-win seasons. Even old buddy Don Landry didn't do that. And Boog was able to get a contract extension from through 2029, 2030. That was some people circling the wagons on Boog. Boog was a former Nichols player, but he was also part of the recruiting kind of tangent to get the Crab Five, that Maryland basketball team. Yep. And one of those guys ended up as a Pelican. How about that? And so he gets to go to all the practices now. But, man, congratulations to Boog. Great recruiter. He's really turned into a fantastic coach out on the bayou. And, man, I'm thrilled for him.
Other news, Mike, too. We're still waiting for any kind of word on what's going to happen with safety A.J. Halsey for Saturday's game. Coach Brian Kelly did just recently address the media and says that they're still waiting for clarification on his status from the NCAA, I'm guessing. But, you know, got into a altercation, I guess you would say, in the final game of the season and was thrown out of the game for unsportsmanlike conduct. I think that's what it says in the box score. Yeah. And the rule is, though, if you're tossed for fighting, you have to miss the first half of the next game.
So we'll see.
Yeah, there's still no idea if Halsey's going to be in action for Saturday in the first half.
You wait this damn long to have that happen?
Yeah, Kelly said they got word on Wednesday about it.
What?
Yeah.
That goes to show you the NCAA should be broken into a million pieces. It takes them this long to come up with that? This sort of reminds me a little bit. This was years ago. Mason Smith got suspended for the first game because he was at a signing where he was autographing helmets and, you know, jerseys and stuff like that. And, you know, it wasn't sanctioned. My thing is this what you worried about?
Yep.
Is this what you worried about? Man, they the biggest bookie in the world, the NCAA. They stealing money. They've done nothing for college athletics or college players. When you got to take ads out to tell you how good you are, and that's what the NCAA does, they take it out ads, man, they're just a bookie. They got their hand out for anything and everything. So, but, man, you can't wait till Wednesday of the game you're going to play to get word. Well, we're looking into the hall. Well, the way they operate, they may hear back from them maybe in 4 weeks. I mean, you know, who knows with the NCAA, but to me, that's the one good thing to come out of all this NIL and transfer stuff. I would say in 5 years, the NCAA is going to be extinct.
Wow.
To me, good riddance. You've done nothing for the sport other than steal money away.
Going to take a break. When we get back, we'll be talking about Our City of Saints, a musical coming to the Jefferson Performing Arts Center. I think it'll be your interest with the anniversary, 20-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina upon us. We'll take a break here on Sports Talk. Be back with even more at the Treasure Chest Casino right after this on WWL. We're back here on Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino. Mike Dettelier, Steve Geller hanging out with you till 7 o'clock as we get ready for the Brian Kelly Show coming up after that. Tigers taking on Clemson on Saturday. Right now, I want to get into a little bit of the creative arts, Mike D. Talking to Paul Saunier, creator of Our City of Saints musical. Paul, thanks so much for the time tonight.
Oh, I'm glad I'm here. Glad to have the opportunity to talk about this program.
Paul, kind of break us down into what exactly, this is about. And I know it's a musical and that sort of thing, but kind of tell us the backdrop of how you came up or how this was kind of pieced together.
Yeah, Mike, I'm about 71 years old, so I'm old enough to remember going to Tulane Stadium. I've always been a Saints fan, had season tickets the first year I was going to high school when they were $1.50 a game for end zone tickets. And also I write a lot of music. So I over the years I've written different songs about living in the city, growing up in New Orleans. And then, like I said, I've always liked the Saints. So I wrote a song called I'm a Hoodat and a few other different songs. And then I started putting them together, linking them from early days in Tulane Stadium. So I wrote a song about when you were in Tulane Stadium, you would stomp your feet on those metal stands. So there was a song about that. There's a song about All Saints Day, which is the day the Saints were born. And then, going through the days with John Meekum, there's a song called A Toy for a Texas Boy. And, going through the games and then getting through Katrina and then, through the Super Bowl and so forth. But then, so I went to Jefferson Performing Arts thinking, let's put this together like in a musical concert, and we could do some story lines between the songs. And they said, well, you know, we'd really like the songs, but we'd really like to turn it more into a musical. So they hired Scarlett Lankin and Aileen LaBeouf to write the script and direct it. So it's evolved into a full musical with actors. There's about 15 people in the cast. Even Bobby Hebert makes an audio appearance in the program. And so it's turning out into a wonderful... Yeah.
The list,
you know, he is the father of the Whodat Nation, so you know,
he is.
That's part of the thing. And you know, Mike, you were talking earlier about Katrina and about going back to the dome, about the unifying force of the Saints, and that's all in here. There's a song about a real emotional song about back home in the dome. You know, coming back to that dome after Katrina. And, you know, the game was just so inspiring. It was just, you know, most people who have gone there said that was more inspiring than the Super Bowl, because it was so personal to everybody. And you know, we have a song like that. We have a song at the end called We Are One Town. Again, you were talking about the unifying factor of the Saints. And so that's how we end the musical, on a song called We Are One Town. You know, rich, poor, black, white, Republican, Democrat. We can all agree on the Saints, especially when they're winning. You know, it's something that brings everybody together.
Paul, you and I are old enough. Yeah. We saw some real lean years. Okay. And I get it today is, man, you're not giving us a lot of confidence in what you're telling about saying something. Okay. I've been through this before, but that's like two generations that didn't see those early teams of the late 60s into the 70s. Maybe don't
exactly
remember the Ditka time frame that well either. But, man, it does happen. We in the rebuild now. But that you were able to piece this together from start to finish, remarkable job. Really, really great job.
Yeah, and it's a span of about, you know, 50 years from the 60s into, you know, today, or to the, at least through the Super Bowl. And talking about the lean days, there is a song called The Dark Days of the Nation. You know, put your ticket on the windshield, couldn't give it away, you know. And I know another one, but To Be Close to You, is a song about Buddy D.
Oh, my God,
the
Buddy
D Parade, called Dressing for Buddy D, which my brothers and I were in that, and it was such a good time. You know, and it's like New Orleans is so spontaneous. You know, we had a week between winning that the conference championship, and, you know, we had that week in the next week's Super Bowl, and in a week, we got 90,000 people in the street with men in dresses.
You know, and Buddy would always tell me this. He was like, Mike, I'm going to tell you this. I always said I'd put the dress on, but I know damn well I'm not going to live long enough to put that dress on. So Bobby comes here year one, and they go to the NFC Championship game. He's like, Mike, something's wrong. Man, you know, Buddy passed away. And you know, come on, something's not right. I might have to do that the first year I'm here. I was like, okay. But Diliberto was right about it. Yeah, I'm not going to live long enough that I have to put that dress on. But, man, to have all this together and to – I think what maybe we didn't appreciate was that 1-2 shot that we had with Sean Payton and Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
And we appreciate it now today, I think, a little bit more than when really they were there. You saw what they brought to the table and how it gave this team some ambiance that they had never had before, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly right, you know. And, you know, I do think one of the things I try to do in writing the songs is to reach people and connect with them. And I know that people living in New Orleans that love the Saints, love the city, there's something in almost every song that they will personally relate to and bring back memories that are real close to them. And that's, you know, that's just the way it is.
Paul, where and when can people go see Our City of Saints?
It's opening tomorrow night, Jefferson Performing Arts. We have shows Friday night, 7:30, Saturday night, 7:30. and a Sunday matinee at 2 p.m. So the tickets are online, jpas.org or Ticketmaster.
Thanks so much for the time, Paul, and look forward to watching the show. Sounds great.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay. Thank you all for having me. Really love it. Love your show.
Thank you.
Paul Saunier, creator of Our City of Saints Music. You can go check it out at the Jefferson Arts Performing Center. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We'll be back to close out the 5 o'clock hour right after this on WWL. Wrapping up this hour of Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Coming up, pick six. We make our selections for college football. And then we'll also be joined by senior writer at go247.com, Glenn West, for the latest on LSU. Top of the hour news coming up here on WWL. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this. Stay tuned on the big one. Big 870, 105.3 FM, WWL.